If you are following along in the digest this morning, please note that the presentation will not follow exactly what you have in your digest. As many of you know, the annual Theological Symposium, sponsored by our denomination's Commission for Theological Integrity, is underway. The fact that this event is being held at Welch College is appropriate for several reasons, foremost of which may be that, as mentioned, this year's theme is the theological legacy of F. Leroy Fourlines. Given Mr. Fourlines' many decades of service to Welch College, as well as the many decades of service to the Commission of Theological Integrity, it is fortuitous that we have this time to share together here. Presumably the last event that will be held on Welch College's West End campus. During today's chapel, we'd like to discuss with you three aspects of Mr. Fourlines' life and legacy. First, we will discuss his biographical background, some information regarding his background and his career. We hope that this will be especially beneficial to those who may know less about Mr. Fourlines. Second, we want to discuss our recent publication. And third, we want to situate Mr. Fourlines in a contemporary perspective to help us better understand his ongoing relevance to our movement and to evangelism as a whole. So, part one, Fourlines' background and career. Franklin Leroy Fourlines was born on November 14th, 1926, to John Leroy and to Lita Nanny Manning Fourlines in eastern North Carolina. The Fourlines family lived on a farm without electricity or indoor plumbing in the country, about 3 miles outside of the nearest town, Winterville, which is about an hour from the Atlantic Ocean. Even in those days, Winterville had less than 1,000 people. The fourth of five children, Fourlines had three older sisters and one younger brother. As a youth, he worked, in his words, as a grease monkey at Albert Smith's SO station. His family attended Winterville Free Will Baptist Church, where his father served as a ruling elder. Finally, at nearly 18 years of age, in October of 1944, Fourlines accepted Christ at a revival service conducted by R.N. Hennett. 4 years later, after that, in the fall of 1948, Fourlines journeyed all the way to Nashville, Tennessee, with $173 in his pocket, and he began attending Free Will Baptist Bible College. As a student, the most consequential course he took was a course entitled Arminian Theology, taught by the college president, Dr. L.C. Johnson. The late Jack Williams wrote, "That class fueled Fourlines' already strong interest in theology. Incidentally, Dr. Pickerilly was also in that course. And what these two men learned in Johnson's Arminian Theology would forever impact the Free Will Baptist denomination. Me and you." We see this over the next century and more as they accepted invitations to teach and to write, and to influence generations of pastors and leaders. I would note our pastors and leaders that we had growing up. And as they helped give rise to what many today are calling Reformed Arminianism. So this class was very significant. By 1952, Fourlines, president of his class, graduated with a Bachelor of Arts. This was only the second class to be awarded a bachelor's degree at Welch College at the time. Free Will Baptist Bible College. Upon graduating, he began pastoring the first Free Will Baptist Church in Newport News, Virginia. Fourlines loved preaching and loves preaching. In fact, Fourlines' mother, on the day of his birth, had prayed that her son would be a preacher one day, although she didn't tell him that until much later, and so he was. And so from June 1952 until August of 1953, Fourlines shepherded his flock. However, in 1953, Fourlines accepted an invitation from Dr. Johnson to teach at Free Will Baptist Bible College. In Dr. Pickerilly's words, his classmate in Johnson's Arminian Theology, Dr. Pickerilly says, "Johnson had been impressed with Fourlines' critical thinking, due to the lively and interactive discussions they had in that course. Accepting 2 years at graduate school, Four Lions has remained at the college in some capacity until this very day. He went on to earn additional degrees from Winona Lake School of Theology, Northern Baptist Theological Seminary, and Chicago Graduate School of Theology. On August 4th, 1956, Mr. Four Lions married Carolyn LaFay Gilbert, with whom he celebrated his 60th wedding anniversary this past August. Originally from Cordova, Alabama, Dr. Johnson had actually introduced them. Together they raised 2 children, James and John Four Lions, and they have many grandchildren. As a professor, Four Lions taught courses in, like biblical ethics, eschatology, minor prophets, and Romans. But to be sure, his favorite course was systematic theology, which he taught for approximately 55 years. If you do the math, this means that he taught and shaped more than 1,000 future pastors and denominational leaders who, again, have in turn shaped us, our churches, the very ones that we've grown up in. As one example among many, Dr. Hester writes, "It was in Brother Four Lines' systematic courses in 1992 that my love for theology blossomed." Or as Dr. Pickerelli states, "Four Lines has been a mentor, not simply to me, but for the whole denomination. Even those who may disagree with him about one matter or another will have to acknowledge, I think, that his viewpoint provides the touchstone from which the discussion emerges." Or as Mr. Watts said, "To say that he is the principal theological influence on most Free Will Baptists would be no overstatement." Some of Four Lines' publications include Biblical Ethics, Biblical Systematics, A Survey of the Minor Prophets, Romans, The Quest for Truth, and Classical Arminianism, and literally hundreds upon hundreds of pamphlets and articles. In addition, his works have been translated into French, Korean, Portuguese, Spanish, and Russian. Dr. Pinson says, "This man's teachings and writings have shaped the denomination that I love." Alongside his teaching and writing, Four Lines chaired the Bible department, today the School of Theology, for almost 30 years, giving its curriculum shape and credibility. He spoke frequently in chapel, even on a whim at an invitation that would arrive just 15 minutes before chapel was supposed to begin because of some cancellation. He also served as the Dean of Students for 17 years. This allowed him to provide counseling and pastoral care to hurting students, to students who had questions and concerns. Four Lines genuinely desired and desires to understand and to help people. And in these ways, his mother's prayer on the day of his birth would continue to find fulfillment in all kinds of ways that perhaps she would have never imagined. Throughout his years, Four Lines has emphasized many themes and topics, but one of the most important, I believe, is integrity, honesty, letting your yeses be yes and your noes be no, not succumbing to cheating, dishonesty, shortcuts, or unethical practices. His attention, his emphasis on this topic was first shaped when he was about 3 years old. In 1929, the stock market had crashed, leading to the Great Depression. His home experienced heavy rain, such that their family lost their crops and income. A difficult several years. Notwithstanding an otherwise very difficult time, Mr. Four Lines specifically remembers his father paying his debts. For an impressionable young Four Lines, this shaped him profoundly. It's hard for us to appreciate the weight of that kind of thing, because we don't really want in our world today. But in 1929, on the dawn of the Great Depression, when your crops had failed for the year, that was a big, big deal. It would have been easy to just scrounge up everything that you could. Four Lines says that, "I was brought up in a strong home with Christian character. Integrity was the most important thing." Fast forward some years, and we've seen this theme of integrity crop up in different ways and in different places. In his writings, for example, we see warnings against antinomianism, cheap, easy believism, and short list and long list legalism. We also see an emphasis on character and ideals and morals and orthodoxy and virtues. Appropriately, he chaired the Commission for Theological Integrity from 1963 until 2012, and he saw the dawn of the Commission's first journal, suitably named Integrity. Through the years, Four Lines has led a life of consequence, influence, and productivity, and we hope for more. He, in a very real sense, is a hero for us, an example to us. Although he retired in 1992 and continued teaching courses until 2011, he, at nearly 90 years of age, still quite literally walks these halls, eats in our lunchroom, and sits in these squeaky chapel chairs. We are thankful to Mr. Four Lines and to his faithful service and to God in the Free Will Baptist denomination and at Welch College. Part two, on honoring the legacy of Mr. Four Lines. Around 2 years ago, I found myself in dialogue with two gentlemen making similar suggestions about the need to honor Mr. Four Lines. These two men were Mr. Watts, who we'll hear from in a moment, and Mr. Chris Talbot. As for my part, I'd been thinking along the same lines they were thinking about. As for me, I'd been spending much time with Mr. Four Lines. I'd been reading a lot of his works, and I had been thinking about these matters. The basic reason why we all believed that honoring him in some way needed to be done was simply this. Mr. Four Lines has served the denomination for nearly 70 years. That's very significant, and that deserves to be honored. The question remained as to how we should honor Mr. Four Lines for some time. That is what we considered. Our efforts were shrouded in secrecy. We didn't tell him about it because we wanted the result to be a genuine surprise. And during our national convention in Kansas City this past summer, we learned that we had successfully kept our secret. To be honest, I wasn't sure that we would because there were, as Dr. Pinson mentioned, a lot of people involved. But we kept it, and we unveiled the promise of Arminian theology, essays in honor of F. Leroy Four Lines. This is a unique book in many respects. We hope that it will be accessible, helpful, and interesting to a large number of pastors, teachers, and laymen with a sound biblical foundation. Part of this volume's uniqueness is in the actual genre that it is. While it's an academic theological work, it's also what's called a Festschrift. The term Festschrift is a German word. It's a combination of two German words that literally means celebratory writing. So it seemed appropriate that we would celebrate Mr. Four Lines through a Festschrift, a celebratory writing. It was our conviction as editors and contributors that we, like so many others, stand indebted to Mr. Four Lines. We hope that this book will benefit not only the Free Will Baptist movement, but many others who consider themselves to be Reformed Arminians or interested in Reformed Arminian theology, such as Richie Clark, who we heard from last night. The promise of Arminian theology is approximately 300 pages in length with 15 different authors. It has four different parts, each containing certain chapters. So part one includes chapters one and two. Chapter one is written by Dr. Andy Ball, who affirms Four Lines' theological methodology and presuppositions. Chapter two is written by Philip Morgan, who discusses what roles worldview, culture, epistemology, and apologetics assume in Four Lines' work. Section two includes chapters 3 through 7. It surrounds particular theological themes. Dr. Hester analyzes Four Lines' discussion of conditional election. Mr. Jesse Owens follows with a chapter on atonement and justification in a Forlinsian scheme. Dr. Raper in chapter 5 outlines sanctification and spirituality in Four Lines' work. In chapter 6, Dr. David Outlaw discusses the topic of conditional perseverance. And Dr. McAfee in chapter 7 reviews Four Lines' progressive covenantal approach to eschatology. Section 3 includes chapters 8 through 11 and considers Four Lines' contributions to ethics, secularism, ministry, and counseling. These chapters are written by Mr. Watts, myself, Mr. Talbot, and Dr. Eddie Moody, respectively. Section 4 concludes the volume with three personal tributes from Dr. Pinson, from James and John Four Lines, and from Dr. Pickerilly. We believe that the foundation that Mr. Four Lines has laid offers great promise for the future. Thus, we have called this project the Promise of Arminian Theology. Contrary to the misconceptions present in some scholarship and traditions regarding Arminius and Arminians, Four Lines' work demonstrates that Reformed Arminianism is biblically faithful, theologically coherent, and spiritually robust. It reveals a theology that offers hope and promise for God's people in numerous areas of life and ministry. Collectively, we are thankful to what Mr. Four Lines has bequeathed to us and to the church, and we celebrate him as a hero of the Free Will Baptist faith. In addition, before I turn it over to Mr. Watts, we would encourage you all to purchase your copy today from Randall House, just right out these doors after chapel.
I have one excerpt in particular that I'd like to share, one of a more personal note, and this is by James and John Four Lines, speaking of their father. They say, "So strongly was he convinced that his students should memorize these values of holiness, love, wisdom, and ideals, and their meanings, that he would often exhort his ethics class, 'If someone were to call you at 2 a.m. and wake you out of a deep sleep to ask you these four basic values, you should be able to say them without thinking.' He regarded these truths so sincerely that they resided in the very core of his being, where he wanted them to be vested in his students. And so it happened that, with sophomore humor, one of his students actually did call him once at 2 a.m. to ask him what the four basic values were. Dad is a very deep sleeper. To his credit, he responded with the correct answers and then asked, 'Who is this?' The student quickly hung up." While some of you may have already purchased this book, we do encourage you to avail yourself of this resource. But frankly, more importantly than that, for those of you who have not yet read some of Mr. Four Lines' work, first off, if you're a student here, you're going to encounter it anyway, but we would just simply encourage you to plunge into these works that have shaped Free Will Baptist thought and ministry in the past, present, and will no doubt shape it in the future. And if you want sort of a visual, a display to facilitate your seeing his ministry and his thought in progress, there's a display out here on the right as you exit here. And you can see from the 50s to the present, just a little snapshot of some of the things that he wrote and that he did. We will now conclude with part three, which tries to put Mr. Four Lines a little bit in more of a contemporary perspective. For many reasons, we believe that the work of Leroy Four Lines has enduring relevance for Christian thought and life. Perhaps the most obvious reason for this is that many of those pastoring our churches, leading our denominational institutions, and serving as board members on the local, state, and national levels have been students of Mr. Four Lines. That alone suggests that Four Lines has exerted an influence on our denomination that far exceeds the typical level of influence that a theology professor, a single theology professor, would in a denominational setting. And so certainly we're grateful for that. Accordingly, Four Lines' work is significant for Free Will Baptist theological reflection, church life, scholarship, and more. Though this could be demonstrated in many ways, we will limit our observations to one development in the evangelical world that has been increasingly evident to those who studied under Brother Four Lines near the end of his teaching career and have since entered the ministry, the academy, or both. For the past 10 to 15 years, many Free Will Baptists and other conservative evangelicals have observed an interesting set of theological developments within the Southern Baptist Convention. Many would describe this development as the rise of five-point Calvinism. Calvinism has always been a part of the Baptist story in America. However, it had not been a dominant force of theological or denominational influence among Southern Baptists for several generations until more recent years. Many are aware that Albert Mohler, president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, is a committed Calvinist. However, this was arguably not the main source of conflict surrounding his earliest years as president of that institution. As early as the 1960s, many Southern Baptist institutions were being increasingly shaped by moderate and even liberal theological views. However, by the 1980s, many conservative pastors, leaders, and professors undertook a concerted effort to reform many of their cherished institutions to what they felt was more biblical positions on numerous theological questions, namely the inerrancy of Scripture. By many accounts, this reform movement was successful, and today you'll hear folks in the Southern Baptist Convention refer to this as the conservative resurgence. Instrumental to this reform were the presidencies of Paige Patterson at the Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary in Wake Forest, North Carolina, and Mohler at the Southern Seminary. Though many Southern Baptists welcomed this conservative renewal, Southern Baptist entities in the years that followed began increasingly to express concerns at the rising number of pastors and leaders who did not espouse a more traditional understanding of Baptist soteriology. Such concerns have manifested themselves in convention debates, publications, conferences, blogs, and many other venues for theological dispute. This is where Four Lines' significance is relevant. In the wake of the turmoil that many non-Calvinist Southern Baptist pastors, professors, and leaders were facing, they began seeking to resource and strengthen their own views. They have done this by, one, pushing back against the influence of Calvinism, but two, more importantly, better grounding their own thinking about the particular theological nuances that separate Calvinism from other theological systems. Of course, through the legacy of Leroy Four Lines, Free Will Baptists have been heirs to a robust, theologically serious, non-Calvinistic understanding of soteriology, or what we might just simply say, salvation. Four Lines, along with Piccirilli, have called this Reformed Arminianism, Classical Arminianism, or Reformation Arminianism. In short, they are referring to the soteriology seen in the 16th century Dutch theologian Jacobus or James Arminius. In their books, The Quest for Truth and Grace, Faith, and Free Will, Four Lines and Piccirilli have both been instrumental in setting forth this distinctly reformed, non-Calvinistic view of salvation that has offered Southern Baptists, as well as other evangelicals, a via media between the errors of Calvinism on the one hand and of Wesleyanism on the other. On a more personal note, I began observing as an upperclassman at this institution and then later as a graduate of this school, two related patterns that were developing. First, I began seeing more well-known evangelical leaders, especially of the Calvinist sort, show up on the campus of Welch College. Second, I began observing President Pinson receiving invitations to speak at gatherings and write for publications not typically associated with Free Will Baptist. I was encouraged by this, but initially unsure of why this was happening. We all know Dr. Pinson is an intelligent, personable leader, and so it seemed plausible that he had formed some relationships that were beneficial to the reputation of our movement and of this college. But this also seemed to be part of a larger convergence of forces. And I've concluded two things. First, Free Will Baptist theology has been increasingly seen and continues to be seen by open-minded conservative evangelicals as a serious doctrinal view and thus is worthy of a serious hearing. This hearing would sometimes take place in avowedly Calvinist venues and publications, and other times in non-Calvinistic venues and publications. Second, Free Will Baptist theology is specifically being seen by many Southern Baptists, save their views on eternal security, as a plausible resource to strengthen their own theological voices amid the rising tide of five-point Calvinism. And if you were at the symposium last night, there was a presentation that really embodies what I'm talking about. I would encourage you to meet and speak with Richard Clark if you get a chance, or at least look in the digest and read his paper. I think you'll find it very a great way of illuminating what I'm talking about. In the larger evangelical community, Arminians and Calvinists do not need to be contentious opponents. In fact, numerous Calvinists have spoken appreciative words of Free Will Baptist, and specifically of Leroy Fourlines, such as Russell Moore and Timothy George. I see it as a positive thing that we have tried to maintain our convictions while also acknowledging fellow co-belligerents in the conflict we increasingly face in a post-Christian America. No doubt Dr. Pinson has taught you students such things from this very pulpit, as well as other faculty members. And I have no doubt much of he, as well as these other faculty members, their own personal and doctrinal integrity, as well as their views about how to engage the evangelical world, owe a great deal to one of their former teachers and mentors, Mr. Fourlines. As I've often heard Dr. Pinson explain, Free Will Baptists who embrace Reformed Arminianism don't so much disagree with their Calvinist brethren on what it means to be in a state of grace, but how one comes to be in a state of grace. This is no small difference, but it is not the type of difference that keeps evangelicals of different backgrounds from contending for the fundamentals of the faith or for contending for religious liberty, just to focus on two important issues. It may indeed keep us from planting churches together, but it need not keep us from continuing to work together when we can. Fourlines' work continues to be cited by authors writing on topics like free will, salvation, and especially Arminianism. Seldom is a new work published on the topic of Calvinism, or non-Calvinism, as it were, that Fourlines' work is not at least cited in the book's bibliography or footnoted in some way. Now, to many of us, such an acknowledgement seems like a rather small thing. But remember that Christianity is not just a matter of the heart and the hands, but of the head as well. Mr. Fourlines' work, if you examine it closely, does an excellent job of bringing together these three aspects of our humanity. Truth must first come to us by way of understanding. This is why his ideas and arguments finding their way into our discussions, into publications, and into our reflections about how to teach and practice the truths of Scripture is such a critical step in growing as students of God's Word. I can tell you that today the way I teach the faith to my congregation has been directly shaped by faithful teaching that I have received elsewhere. And in so much that my instruction bears fruit in the lives of my flock, in some ways that fruit is not only mine to rejoice in, but it is also the fruit born out from the life and ministry of another who lives off Roland Road in Nashville, Tennessee. At the 2015 National Meeting of the Evangelical Theological Society in Atlanta, Georgia, four Free Will Baptists presented papers, including your own Dr. Pinson and Dr. McAfee. And I could not help but wonder two things. One, have this many Free Will Baptists ever been on any kind of program for any kind of evangelical gathering, academic or otherwise? And two, would this have ever been possible were it not for the investment that Leroy Fourlines made in his students at Welch College? I think the answer to both of these is no. And so, quite simply, we exhort you, the next generation, the rising generation of Free Will Baptist leaders, to learn your heritage, embrace your heritage, and, as much as possible, honor your heritage.